KPCA LP, Petaluma, California.
Good morning.
Yes, we have a lovely morning.
I love it. Because it keeps the noise levels down. It's calming.
Yeah.
And last night I was getting up in the middle of the night going out on the deck, and it was, I mean, the moon was bright. The stars were out. It was a lovely evening.
Well, it's good to have a little moisture, too, because we have not had nearly enough rain.
No.
It's bone dry.
It's going to rain this weekend, though. So.
Really?
4 or 5 days, supposedly, but remember that changes. I hope so. Yeah. I thought it was going to rain the other day, and then it didn't.
Well, staying in for the rain. I mean, we're staying in anyway because of the coronavirus, generally.
Well,
aren't we?
Kind of.
What are you guys doing?
Well, actually, I was
staying in.
Well,
I'm over 60.
Well, yeah. I was doing some stuff yesterday. I did something that I never thought I'd ever do. I bought a leaf blower. Oh my God.
I want a battery.
It's not gas. I bought a battery one. So I had to decide. I wanted an electric one. And then I got an electric one home. And it was so heavy that, and the plug kept coming out. And so, you know, I bought that one back. And then I ended up going to Friedman's because they were having a Makita sale there. And so I went and I tried to educate myself on a leaf blower. So then I ended up going to Lowe's. And then I ended up going to Home Depot, which I don't like Home Depot.
Yeah.
And so we ended up buying one that's pretty powerful. But it doesn't have like a little tip at the end that, you know, so you can get the little crevices on your deck. So I bought this one. I know I can return it, but I have to say the deck looks really good.
And since we're talking about, or we started to talk about, and we probably will talk more about pathogens and things like that, you do know about one of the downsides with leaf blowers, that it stirs up a lot of allergens and things like that.
Well, that's probably true.
Yeah, that's one of the downsides.
But allergies? I don't know.
Why don't people have big vacuum cleaners they can use outside? Doesn't that make more sense?
Because they're really hard to use. They don't work that well.
Wow.
I had one of those, and then I had to get rid of it. And then the leaves clog it.
Everything about the blowing makes no sense to me, because half the time I see people blow the stuff, and then it's just going to end up somewhere else. And
well, that's okay. At least it makes it look clean.
But if you blow, you have to actually put it in something, right? Like when I was a kid, we used to rake leaves, right?
Yeah,
and we'd put them into a big plastic
bags that are all in the landfill now because we weren't.
Well, now they're probably biodegradable, but back then they were big Glad bags.
Yeah.
But do people with leaf blowers just sort of bypass that part of it? They just go, it's out of my way, so
well, it just depends. It just depends on what you're blowing. I mean,
and where you're blowing it to. I'm having neighbors peer out the window to see if you're blowing them in their direction.
Because I saw this guy down the street all the time. He's got this blower, and he blows the leaves right out of the gutters, but then they just go somewhere else.
Well, no, I mean, if you do that, you have to get a pile, and you do need to pick them up. But that's not the kind of leaf blowing that I
Well, at least I'm glad that you didn't get a gas-powered one.
I would never have gotten a gas-powered one, for God's sake.
They're just so nice.
Well, I was going to get electric, but I have to say the battery one was pretty nice. And then you have to really check what kind of batteries, what the lifetime is on the battery.
They lithium ion?
Yes, yeah. And so then they last longer.
Yeah.
So.
And how do you dispose of those batteries?
Well, I guess you take them to a disposal place.
Yeah. You know what? I have a garage full of batteries I'm supposed to take to some disposal place.
Yeah, I do too.
They're just sitting in
a wine box full of them.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, it's not like, you know, the batteries you just buy, you know, for your flashlight. So hopefully they'll last longer. Is what the goal is. So, but it sounds like we've got a lot of serious stuff going on in our country.
We do. We do indeed.
And in our county.
Well, everywhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was reading the articles today in the Press Democrat and the New York Times and the Chronicle about the virus. And the bottom line is, we do not have enough testing kits.
Mm-mm.
And we don't have leadership. But I want to say that I'm very impressed the way that Nancy Pelosi is working with Steve Mnuchin. And it doesn't seem like they're allowing Trump to get in the way of trying to negotiate, dealing with this crisis, worldwide crisis.
It's a pandemic.
It is a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting. You know, when I was in dental hygiene school, you know, you would learn about pandemics and, you know, all kinds of diseases. Mm-hmm. And here we are. I actually have a friend in China who's been there, who can't get out. She's been there for a couple months already.
I'm a little confused because a couple of weeks ago, there were people that were calling it a pandemic and other people that were still not calling it a pandemic. I thought by definition, if it goes from one continent to another, it's a pandemic.
Well,
does it have to be a certain number of continents to...
No, I think the problem is we don't have any leadership here.
Yeah.
And they were trying to privatize this this pandemic so companies can make money. Instead, we needed to get kits together, but we needed also the ingredients in the kits so you can go ahead and do the testing. And that's just not happening. And then it's about sending it to certain labs.
Yeah.
And, you know, Trump, you know, and his, you know, almighty privatization, you know, they're not prepared to do these tests. So you really want to go with the CDC, and we do have in Santa Rosa the a clinic, is it state CDC? Or no, that's federal.
Yeah.
But we also have a Northern California clinic in Santa Rosa, which they were trying to close down in December.
Did you guys see Trump's speech? Because
the coherency of it?
Here's what I can't understand. Look, anyone speaking extemporaneously can trip over things, say the wrong thing.
Right.
We know a lot of people like that. You know, there's a lot of people that are gaffe machines, etc. But when you've got something written for you, so I got to figure out. So who wrote that? I'm trying to figure out who wrote that for the president, and how could he get
Stephen Miller?
Well, he has a habit of having things written for him and not following the lines,
But I think this was actually written. I mean, do you think he just ad-libbed the part where he said that the insurance companies were going to cover the treatment for coronavirus? Because that's not true.
The guy's a liar.
Well,
whatever he says comes out of his mouth is a lie.
I guess what I really was wondering, though, was that a written lie or an extemporaneous lie that he just threw in there at the spot? Because it looked like he was reading the whole thing.
No, it did.
Which makes me wonder who's writing it and who's checking what's being written. Because
I think the czar is. He's just the czar and the czarina.
It's too bizarre. It also makes me wonder about the policy. Like, okay, first he said cargo. Right. We don't have cargo. And so I'm thinking, okay, the shipments I have coming in from Switzerland for these, high-end reference monitors, am I not going to get those?
Right.
I'm starting to think about my business.
You should.
And then I find out that's not the case. So it's not affecting cargo. So I guess that's my big question. Is he misreading what's being given to him, or is the person writing it completely clueless? Or... do they do it, see how it takes, and then realize some of the stuff can't be implemented and change the policy after that?
Well, I think a lot of it is what sticks. And so in how we can go ahead and, you know, do a policy or, you know, the propaganda around what sticks.
Imagine you're in Europe. You know, you're an American in Europe, and you're thinking about, you're going to stay for a little while, and then you hear this news.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You're canceling your later flight, trying to book a more close flight that you can leave, like, tomorrow.
Well, not to mention lodging. Your lodging has only been reserved for so long.
Exactly. Well, I don't think there's any problem now. But,
exactly.
But I was supposed to go to Europe next month, and I was already thinking, wow, I would hate to have something weird happen, like I go over there and then I wouldn't be able to get back in, or I'd have to be quarantined or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that what's happening? So now Americans can come back, apparently. They're not excluded. So if you're an American citizen and you're abroad, we're going to let you in. But what's the process? You get screened and then you get quarantined? And
They started this way too late because all these people were coming in from, you know, Europe. I mean, nothing was closed. Mm-hmm. And when you have a pandemic, the first thing you need to do is you need to start slowing down and making sure that everybody's coming in is tested. But you have to have test kits. Mm-hmm. So we had a government that was completely incompetent because we're being run by an incompetent president. Oh, sorry about hitting the table. I hit the table, like, you know, because
I can hear the bang in my ear.
Do you know for sure, though, that that's how it got in? I mean, could it have come from a bird? Could it? Do we know for sure it had to have been a human?
Who or what the host is?
Well, yeah, and
they know.
Well, you know, what was the movie with Dustin Hoffman?
With a monkey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
Outbreak.
Garberville and Ferndale. Ferndale.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I actually, on my Netflix, that movie is, you know, up so we can watch it. And it's really important for people to watch about what happens when an epidemic really happens.
Exactly.
And they really don't know. It appears they don't know where it's coming from, but the chances... Well,
that movie didn't end well, so I don't know, because basically, far as I remember, they decided to just blow the town up or something.
And then you had the military there, you know. It's like, you know, you had the military, and then you had the people trying to deal with the pandemic.
I hope it doesn't get like that.
Well, I think it already is, but I want to congratulate Katie Porter, Representative Katie Porter, for going after the head of the CDC, and you can watch this on YouTube. She just hounded him and hounded him about how things are going to get paid and making sure that when people come in that they're not going to be charged for tests and that people are not going to be charged for this. Because
the tests are supposed to be free.
Well, no. He was not saying that. She hounded him, and he finally said yes.
Right.
And she said, oh, thank you. Okay, so everybody is going to have free testing.
Right.
So I don't really know where that stands, but I say Katy Perry is the person that I want representing.
Katy Perry?
Katy Porter. But Katy Perry is pregnant.
Oh, no.
That is new. And Orlando Bloom. Bloom? Is that his name?
Yeah.
I think that's the father. And so so we kind of segued out of this, but I think it's really important. I think for Katy Perry, people get on YouTube and just put her name in and really watch how she handled the CDC.
You said Katy Perry again.
Katy Porter. Mrs. Porter.
I'm wondering what effect this virus is having on pregnant women.
Well, I'm not pregnant, so I wouldn't know. But, it is mostly elderly. It's people that definitely have respiratory problems. And if you're a smoker, you should stop smoking. I don't know if we really know. I mean, how it's affecting people.
We also don't know what's going to happen with this virus, because there's this thing called evolution that Pence doesn't believe in, but it does happen. These things evolve, they change, they can become more resistant.
Well, it takes at least a year to a year and a half to really get a vaccine.
Yeah.
For
a year to 18 months or something like that.
And so it's not going to go away quickly. They're saying that, you know, in the summertime when it's warmer, that there should be a decrease, but it will come back. So it's kind of scary times right now, and I think it's...
UCSF is saying 40 to 70% of the U.S. population will be infected over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yep.
40 to 70%.
I actually had an appointment this afternoon at UCSF, and they called and canceled yesterday. And and they canceled me to actually a date in April. And so they're definitely being cautious.
Well, there's a lot we just don't know. One of the things is whether you can get it again once you've had it.
Well,
do we know?
I don't think we know.
No.
And you know, unfortunately, this is why it is so important when you in government that you have that one person is not the czar for everything, because you need to have some competent people. And with Trump, you know, he'll fire you.
Well,
you
the problem
make
is,
comments.
Yeah. Well, if competent people tend to disagree with incompetent people, so it's really hard if you're competent and you're working for someone incompetent who doesn't like competence. You don't have much of a future in the Trump administration.
Well, no, I mean, and that's why I think when Trump is out of office, there needs to be a lot of changes. about how much power one person can have.
Yeah.
We can talk quickly about, I went to the Planning Commission meeting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about
and
that.
And I listened to the planners.
Yeah, they voted against the project.
They voted against moving the project forward. There was
this is the Corona...
It's the Corona Smart Station. Corona Smart Station. It's the housing for that station.
It has nothing to do with the coronavirus.
Right. No, completely separate. But you know, but it is kind of, it is kind of a virus. It seems like we have a virus on our city council, and the virus is whatever a developer says, we're just going to go ahead and support it, no matter what the evidence says. And that's what seems to be happening. And so there were four of us that actually got up and spoke on the project, and what three of us had in common was we all said, you don't have to vote yes on this project. Send it back to the city council and let the four members that are making the deal behind the scenes, let them vote on it. And that's what they did. Because why do you want this on your shoulders? And, you know, and I'll tell you, this city's got to really clean their act up because between the Warmington project, when Mike Healy's doing stuff behind the scenes, Deer Creek, he's done stuff behind the scenes, everything that happens in this town, Mike Healy is behind it. And and it's just, it's about time. We've got to get rid of this council, and we need to get a council that's going to be thoughtful of 2020 instead of 1962 politics. And it just seems like that is what's happening in this town, and it's been happening a long time, but people are all of a sudden waking up.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing is that I absolutely support a rail station at the Corona site, but without dealing with the transportation and ignoring all the impacts, and you have all these senior citizens that live across the street,
well, it's not,
that is irresponsible.
It's not transit-oriented development in the way we've described it in our general plan.
That's
with
right.
Mixed use. So this is what I'm kind of confused about. I thought the last vote for the council, wasn't it a 3-4 decision?
It was a 3-4.
And it was 3... opposed and 4 in favor.
That's right.
And one of those opposed was Kevin, right? Kevin McDonald. But then on the Planning Commission...
Originally, yeah.
On this recent meeting, he's on the Planning Commission as the liaison. He was one of the 2 votes in favor of it.
Right.
Why? So I don't understand that. So on one hand, he votes against it, but then at the Planning Commission stage... He votes
the first
for.
Planning Commission.
No, I'm talking about this recent one.
He voted in favor of it?
Yeah.
Did he vote in favor to
of the CUP?
Punch it back to the city council? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a denying the permit. It was a 4-2 decision. And Kevin was in one of the 2 votes.
Kevin and Marzo voted the same?
Yeah. So I'm just curious.
Actually, the thing is that I left the meeting after I spoke because I had a commitment I had to do.
Yeah.
And so by the time I got home to listen to the meeting, they voted in favor of, I think, of the CUP, but they voted no on the project to kick it back to the city council.
Yeah.
So I don't know who voted which way. And what really bothers me most is in these articles in the newspaper in the past, they used to put which city council voted which way. Well, I'd like to know that information again. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens when a newspaper becomes too political. They don't want to put people's names in the newspaper. Well, I want to know what my representatives are voting on. And that's a real problem with the paper, because if Kevin did vote to punt it back to the city council, then that means they have a 5-2 vote on this.
Mm-hmm.
But,
that's been the style of this newspaper for decades.
Well, not
which is why I, in 2002, I fought so hard against Mike O'Brien's, then city council member Mike O'Brien's idea to do away with PCA, where people could actually watch these meetings on TV instead of relying on the press or the Argus
and
Courier.
That's what they were,
trying
to do. I mean, you know, the Argus Courier, I'm sorry, John Burns is back, Mr. Dark Horse. I mean, it's not Dark Horse, he's the black aura around him. Mm. And it's just really sad that our newspaper, you know, has to bring a publisher back that is basically working for the Chamber of Commerce and not for the entire community.
Yeah.
And you know, and, he, and it's like, it's almost like schizophrenic, the stuff he writes, you know. What do you really believe in today?
So,
oh, that's right.
So here's to clarify. So the planning commissioners, again, had a chance to weigh in on the contentious Corona Station development project Tuesday, denying a permit that would allow construction of the 110-unit development alongside the proposed Eastside Smart Station following council's formal approval late last month. It was a 4-2 decision by the commissioners, kicks the item back to the city council once again, and prolongs what has been a flashpoint development issue in the community, underlying the body's strong distaste for the development. Commissioners voted against issuing the permit largely over fundamental disagreements with the entire project and its connection to two other developments and the smart station. The move is a staunch message of disapproval from a body whose prior decisions on the project amounted to considerable opposition in direct conflict with the council's votes of support. And this is a quote from Commissioner Heidi Bauer. I just don't think this is the right location for this. That's all. I think we could be doing better. I think it should be mixed use. And it's not what I think of when it comes to transit-oriented development. And so it shows, actually, in the article, it says Commissioner Sandy Potter was absent, with Commissioner Patrick Streeter and City Councilman Kevin McDonald voting in the minority to approve the permit. And the commission unanimously did approve the site plan architectural elements of the single-family development. So Kevin and Patrick on the Planning Commission voted to approve the permit.
Well,
so that's why I'm confused about.
What's interesting is Sandy left. She was there for the first agenda item and then got up and left. And I said, why are you leaving? And she said she had an emergency or something. And I'm thinking, well, that's really convenient. You don't have to put your name on this to be a swing vote, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to know why she left that meeting, because she's put on there not to walk away. And I'm very disappointed in this vote. But what I'm not disappointed in is, I have to say, Scott Alonso he really runs a darn good meeting. And he's on the Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And Heidi is fabulous with the questions she asks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a lot of good people on that Planning Commission asking a lot of good questions. But any time a city decides to cut deals behind the scene to make this happen, we can't do this until this happens and we have to cut a deal with that person, then we have to cut a deal with the third person involved in this. That's what I'm tired of this city doing, is cutting deals behind the scenes and then basically shoving this stuff down our throats,
right,
and saying traffic is getting worse. Well, yeah, no kidding. Kind of planning.
So now, just devil's advocate, and part of it is the complexity of this, because there was land that was privately owned that would have been, everyone thinks, would be good to have as a station. There had to be a deal there. There had to be some sort of deal with SMART and the owners of the land, unless we decided to just do eminent domain and take it, right? So that's partly what's going on. And then I guess what it has to do with a land swap as well. So there's the station.
Make it complicated, more complicated.
It gets very complicated.
Yeah.
Part of it is because it wasn't public land, right? And so you're having to negotiate with these people that are the landowners, and these landowners want to develop the property. That's where it all gets complicated, because then you're not only approving a station development, you're approving an exchange of land, you're also approving a housing development, and it all gets tangled up. And then the problem is, you're dependent on that deal for a station to happen at all, or at least that's the sense.
Exactly.
So some of the council members were like, okay, yeah, we'd like this to be a better project, but how are we going to get the station?
All they care about is downtown. Kevin told me, I said, I asked him about this deal quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And he says, well, that's the only way we can get it downtown station,
yeah,
you know, a development. And I'm thinking, oh, so you give the West Side crap, and then you go ahead and it's about downtown, and that's all it's about. And that's the problem. They're not looking at this entire community.
Mm.
It's a division. And this is why we need district elections, because Eastside needs some representation, and we have absolutely zero, because Kevin's comment about, oh, it's about downtown, that's all he cares about. And so it is a problem. But I do want to bring up at the Sonoma County Transportation Authority meeting this last Monday, Kathy Miller was very clear about the SMART station, that Petaluma is the only city so far that's having to pay for the second smart station.
Yeah.
Now, Dubato had to pay for a third one, but every other city is getting their second station done, paid for through the smart tax.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but Petaluma is not. And so to boot, we're paying for our station. There's a $2 million that is of cash or whatever is being transferred from one pot to another. And I am really tired of not having representation on that city council.
What's
for
her explanation for this?
Well, this is she never gives an explanation. But when the council was talking about the Corona station before it went back to the planning commission, Kathy Miller was very clear up there. She didn't represent any of the people that were opposite of her view. And so, but none of those people were in the audience that apparently she represents. And so I call them the invisible people.
Right.
And I just felt like it was the invisible man or a woman in the audience that she was representing. And actually the bodies of the citizens there, she clearly let us know she does not represent us.
But I just wanted to clarify something. You made a statement about district elections and making sure that both sides of the town are represented. And in this case, you feel that being well represented means you're taking your concerns into account, particularly with this development that should be mixed use, but particularly this one. But look at who voted against the project. They live on the west side. So your point, that's what I'm a little bit confused about, is three of the council members who voted against the project actually live on the west side.
Well, but the three that voted against the project, which I'm glad that they did.
So they're representing the east side better.
They're the only ones that recognize responsible development.
But they never brought up any mitigations. Yeah. They never talked about the traffic impacts. They never said that we need to make it safer for people to get in and out. So they can go ahead and vote no all they want.
Sure.
But without putting mitigations in there, they are not helping the project, because that is how you make a project better, is by putting mitigations and actually raising those issues. They are silent on the Corona overcrossing, built in 1955, two lanes, no bike lane, and no walkway. So, no, I'm not giving anybody a slack on stuff.
No, my point on this is that the person you mentioned specifically, who was least representative of the east side, is actually living on the east side.
Well, that is true, but she is weighed down by a completely different area.
My only point is, regardless of where these people live, they may make decisions that don't adequately represent the areas they live in.
Okay, let me rephrase this. I do not believe that the east side is represented by any council member on that city council.
Even ones that live on the
east side. Even ones that live on the east side. And the west side ones don't either, because they ignore the situation. You call them on it on an issue.
Right.
You're not even getting callbacks from these council members and our mayor.
But what would a district election do to change that, I guess, is my point.
Because maybe we could find areas, if we're not gerrymandering, like Roner Park is trying to do or tried to do.
Yeah.
Maybe we might get some people that really understand what it's like to live in these quadrants of the city.
Uh-huh.
Because right now, we don't have anybody that understands the way traffic flows, the way development is happening, even future development. Because where this Corona station is, the property where the roundabout is, north of the roundabout, that's the Scott property.
Yeah.
That can be within the sphere of influence to be brought into the city limits.
Yeah.
And that is going to be a huge development right by a rail station. You need to look at the big picture, and this city council is not, because not one council member even brought up the Scott property. And they're trying to stay within
that's the one behind the post office.
I completely
agree with everything you're saying. The only thing I'm not convinced of is that district elections would necessarily change that. Jason,
I am not sure if they are either, but what I know is the East Petaluma does not have representation, and we don't have anybody. The vision is for downtown only. And so one thing that yesterday or Wednesday, there was a Know Before You Grow discussion about the downtown project.
Right.
You know, so we got to see, you know, what it looks like and how they're designing everything. And so
the one near the train station?
The one near the train station in downtown. And, I mean, I'm totally supportive of that.
Uh-huh.
When I was on the city council, we had those visions back then and actually had plans. So this is quite clear for me. I mean, you know, this is like coming back 20 years later, talking about what we talked about 20 years ago. So I really understand what's going on. And what was I going to go to? My, I have this issue with these high-powered utility lines. And the fact of the matter is how they really block being able to widen streets for pedestrians. And so I appreciated that Heather Hines said to me, even though I've asked city staff this question, I never got an answer. So I got an answer publicly. Those are high-powered utility lines, and I understood that. But then the next day I went down to on D Street, and I'm looking at the power lines on the south side on D Street. And I realized that those are kind of taking, those are lines that are being, those are not the higher voltage utility lines, I don't believe.
The standard lines you see in your neighborhood.
Well, kind of. Yeah. I mean, they might be a little bit more than that. I don't know. But I know they're not the high-powered ones. And so I'm thinking, why isn't the city looking at least pushing those poles more south so you can actually make this into a more of a promenade that is safer? Because D Street is not going to get rid of their cars. Cars and trucks are still going to be driving on D Street, and we need to make it safer. And so I actually have a letter written that I'm going to send to the Heather Hines and to the city manager, but I want an answer for this. Can those particular lines be moved? Because I understand now why the other ones can't, and I kind of started figuring that out when I talked to Peggy Flynn about it. But I think there can be things to make it improve. And this goes back to the Sonoma County Transportation Authority wanting to put this tax for transportation on the ballot. And some of the cities want to use the money for undergrounding utilities, but you don't have to underground. And so I guess maybe I used the word underground. Well, maybe we just need to talk about how do you move these poles.
Right.
And that might be a better or the only alternative. But I want to hear people on my city council asking these questions.
Yeah.
Instead of just looking at things so narrowly. Because it affects the entire community. So, and I do not
think... Maybe they are asking those questions, but they certainly aren't communicating with the constituency.
How many times have I asked that question and I finally have to get it, somebody answered because I'm at a forum asking a question that's kind of outside the parameter of what they're talking about, but it all connects. Everything interconnects.
Yeah.
You know, and so... But I just want to go quickly about the Sonoma County Transportation Authority and the tax that they're trying to consider extending. All of the money for Petaluma goes into one project, Rainier. So your streets are not going to get fixed. The street in front of your house will never get fixed. There will be money that will be going into transit, which is very good. I'm pleased about that. I'd like to see more money going into transit. But they're very concerned because the Prop 13, which had nothing to do with Prop 13, but the school state tax failed. That was a 55%, and that failed.
Mm-hmm.
You had the smart tax fail, and then you had the fire tax fail.
Mm-hmm.
So you had three taxes. So that's telling you people are tired of more taxes. And it's disturbing that, you know, cities are just talking about taxes and not understanding that maybe people are getting a little tired of this.
They've been tired of it. I mean,
but this is showing it.
I don't think we had to wait for the outcome of this election to realize that it was going to go.
But Measure M passed.
Surprised.
Yeah.
Previously, so it's not like we have had taxes pass, like not in this last election, but before that we did get Measure M.
Well, but that was a campaign that was well done.
You had
all cities supporting it, and
That's exactly what I wanted to get to. I think the tendency for people, if they don't have enough information or they have bad information, is to vote no on taxes. I think we could have maybe we have to take each one individually, but let's start with the smart one. I think the big problem with that was there had been acknowledged lack of transparency.
That's true.
Before that. And you can't have that happening and then say, vote for this extension of the tax and we're going to promise that we're going to give you more transparency. People, I think, were voting to have that transparency up front.
I have to say, I'm very impressed that you go ahead and you do a ballot measure, was it 2008, for the SMART.
Yeah.
And it is 2020. Mm. No, it was past 2008. It was 2000.
No, it was 2008.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
And so, and then you had a recession.
Yeah.
So you had all this negative stuff.
Yeah.
You got a train up and going.
It's great.
For 2 years already.
It's absolutely great.
You can't always get all that information that people are asking for.
Oh, I know.
And so, what do the newspapers do? The Press Democrat immediately started attacking SMART.
Yeah.
Saying, we want these numbers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, those numbers might not really exist at this point because it's something
good
new.
Good point.
And so, so the Press Democrat, I want to thank them for helping screw this up.
Yeah,
and then in the long run, then they endorsed it. And then you had, you know, the Gallaghers that put in all this money.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think it's positive that Ranch, you know, Grayton Rancheria comes up and they put $1 million in either. None of it feels really good to any voter.
Yeah.
So it's...
money and politics, and this is what's happening.
Well, and Measure M, the parks...
Yeah.
Grant and Rancheria put a lot of money into that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that is really, and it was a well-run campaign, and that is, and people like parks.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why that passed. But I do not think it's a good idea if we're going to just depend on one organization to put all the money on there, because I happen to put up the big signs, you know, around town on the east side. And so some of the signs said it was paid for by blankety blank,
mm-hmm.
and others said by Sonoma County, you know, the Grant and Rancheria. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure if that is super positive.
No.
Even though I really appreciate what they do, and they're going to have a lot more money to spend in the county, I'm just not sure if that's going to be positive all around.
Well,
I don't
now,
there's
also the traffic impact, especially at the D Street area.
Absolutely.
That has people hating SMART.
I mean,
you know
that's
what?
True.
But then look, this goes back to this is a big pet peeve, all the rail crossings.
Yep.
The city, I will tell you, the city council members, you talk to them about that, they say, it's not my fault. And what's not their fault? Wait a second. We knew SMART was coming, and we didn't take one rail crossing and widen it because we knew the East Side Station was going to come. So the rail crossing at Corona is the same that it's been there since it was the train started going through.
With no sidewalks.
With no sidewalks. And, you know, and so I am tired of politicians saying, it's not my fault. Yes, it is your fault. You were elected. You needed to look into the future. The D Street could have been widened to prepare for moving those utility lines someday.
Mm.
And if you have it wider, you could have had a right-hand turn lane, a left, and a straight. And it wouldn't have brought more traffic. It just would have made traffic flow better. But this is what happens when the city did not buy where the Scarf and Barf used to be, the Pink Palace, and you buy hamburgers right on the corner of Lakeville and D Street. The city should have purchased that, but no, Bill White did, a Basin Street. And so the city allowed a developer to buy a most important piece of property that you could have actually made improvements in, public improvements. And so this is what happens when developers own city councils. This is why we need to get rid of this city council majority, and we need to break it up, and we need to get people that actually have a vision for the future of this town.
Well, there's also, you talked about traffic. I mean, one of the things people complain about, I don't hear it as much anymore, but the road diet. You know, and it's the traffic calming measures on Petaluma Boulevard downtown, and specifically on East Washington.
Yes.
So the lead up to that, if you're going north, you'll find...
On East.
So if you're on Petaluma Boulevard, and you're going north before you get to East Washington, so you're right downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So I understood that what that was originally designed to have was three fewer parking spaces on the right. And the traffic engineers designed it like that.
Right.
And that would have given people more time to start taking a right turn instead of having to back up and wait. That's not an example of, you know, one of the developers. That was our downtown association who basically said, no, we can't give up three parking spaces.
You're right.
And that decision screwed up the traffic.
No, it
and so sometimes the decisions have nothing to do with the developer. They just have to do with, I guess, the council wanting to make sure they don't upset the business community, which I understand, too, because businesses, if you have a storefront there, you want people to be able to park. I totally get that. But you can't have it both ways.
You can't complain
about the traffic and then undermine it by jamming in extra parking spaces that were not designed to be there by traffic engineers.
Well, you know, this
is the traffic engineers.
Well, you know, I mean, for a living. I hate this saying, the common sense, but sometimes there is common sense. Yeah. But the problem
their common sense was, if we don't have those free parking spots, our businesses are going to fail.
You know, it's interesting. When I go downtown now, I don't really try and park, you know, close to a business. I actually park a distance away because I don't want to be caught in the two-hour parking debacle, which I have to say, I really think they should up the parking past 2 hours. It should be at least three.
Here's a crazy idea. Why don't we do what most cities do?
Charge for parking.
Yes.
Exactly.
I mean, come on. Right. Every time I go to San Rafael, is it a big deal? Am I not going to go to San Rafael because I have to pay a buck or something to be there for a couple hours?
Yeah.
What's the big
deal? Well, I mean, I go to Santa Rosa, and I hate paying for parking. But, you know, on the other hand, is, you know, there's parking for people.
Yeah.
And it brings in a lot of revenue. Yeah. But I think you have to be very careful when you start implementing those, because Santa Rosa actually got their hands slapped and they're now backing off on some of the tickets that they've been giving.
Yeah.
Well, they started the balance.
Well, they started charging for the parking garage, but you get a validation. Thank you.
That's at the shopping mall.
Yeah, I'm talking about the shopping mall. But
you have to spend $100 or more to get the validation.
No.
Unless you go into the Apple store and then they give you one.
Oh,
I didn't know that you had to spend $100.
It probably depends on the store. That's not true.
Well, no, there. Excuse me. I go to the Apple store up there, and when I go to the Apple store, they validate my card.
I get that.
But one day I forgot to get it validated, but I wasn't there for the hour, so I didn't have to pay. It might be up to 2 hours free now. I'm not really sure. And so when I was going out the door, there's this guy at this little podium, and he said if you pay $100, if you've spent over $100, they'll validate your card. So I saw that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny? The only place I ever go to and the only reason I ever go to that mall is the Apple Store. So yeah, my experience there is, it's always free parking because I go to the Apple Store.
Exactly.
I had no idea there's a policy of paying that much money to get a free validation. Anyway, we could be doing something like that. We could start charging for parking.
Right.
Maybe in the parking garage, maybe for certain hours, maybe you give a break to employees of businesses or something. I don't know. But
we know there's always been a problem with parking downtown.
We're talking about traffic. Yeah. We're talking
about three parking spaces.
Yeah. Anyway, sometimes decisions are made that go against, in the name of common sense, it's common sense not to lose these parking spaces because then we're going to lose business. Yeah, but it's not common sense from the traffic engineer standpoint.
Well, and it really does screw things up because you can't make that right.
It happens to me all the time. Yeah. I just want to go. And then the other side of it is, doesn't that make you not want to drive? Yeah, you're right. I should drive less. So there is not something to be said for that. When the traffic gets so bad, people start thinking of alternatives.
Well, let's just see what kind of a mess they develop in the South Petaluma Boulevard South road diet when that comes.
Oh, well, you know what? It's going to be interesting. But I think what's going to be interesting is when that hotel opens off the riverfront. The riverfront. With a single lane in, basically, and a single lane out. I mean, you want to go and talk about a Mike Healy project? That was Mike Healy's project, and it should be called Healy Lane, as far as I'm concerned.
So this is kind of funny. So maybe not funny, but yesterday Gavin Newsom spoke. You probably all saw that.
Yeah.
And he said it's, talking about the coronavirus. And unless I misheard it, it's urging cities to cancel events in which you have over 250 people assembled, right? And so some events are being canceled, but the butter and eggs days still
I'm already hearing people that are not going to be going.
Why are we equivocating? I mean, why can't we just cancel it? I understand.
Watch, attendance is going to be real. Well, they might. They may end up canceling it.
Well, I have tickets to see Michelle Obama on April 1st, and I was looking today to see if the tickets, what was happening, and I'm not really sure, so I'm trying to find out.
My next concert is until September, so hopefully I'll be okay.
I have tickets to a number of events coming up in the next month, and my in-basket in my email yesterday was loaded with sorry, we're canceling.
See, I have not got that yet from this event, and I've been kind of waiting.
I even got an email. I'm a member of Gloria Ferrer Winery, and that you cannot,
I know you are.
You can't go to the winery without calling ahead and making a reservation so they can honor that 6 foot between people rule.
I do like that.
What are you doing today?
I think you know what I'm doing.
I do like that Trump rallies are getting canceled. That's cool.
To be serious about this, what kind of an idiot would a president wouldn't want to go ahead and get tested when you're around Brazil? Two people, the president of Brazil and the disease person.
Because ignorance is bliss.
I know, it's like, God, there is a God.
No, it's better sometimes it's better not to know, you know?
This is by example. And it's really frightening.
Well, a week ago he was telling people just to go to work and that changed. That was like the most somber and nervous and weak look I'd ever seen.
Well, I think he can't talk half the time because he can't enunciate words.
Well, that's because his teeth are coming unglued.
Yeah, like his brain's coming unglued. But, I just want to bring up something else that was in the Argus. It makes city age friendly. Mrs. Rebelot, what is her name? Her first name is Chris, and she actually moved to Petaluma. And is, making Petaluma an age-friendly city. And this kind of goes back a little bit to the SMART station, that all the senior citizens down who live at Youngstown and Petaluma Estates, all they want to do is be able to walk on the street in front of their mobile home parks, and they can't because of huge utility lines in the road. They want safety.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really great that Petaluma has a lot of senior citizens that are actually coming to the plate and saying why we want a healthier community, why we want to be able to walk better, and just be a healthy community. So
that's good to see.
You know, I think there's some good things going on. It's just
What I think is interesting. I posted an interesting article I saw that was about the coronavirus and our response to it as compared to the climate change response.
Right.
And it's really interesting because climate change is an enormous threat to our survival.
Yeah.
And yet we're so slow to act. But with this, look at how quickly, and they go into the psychology of it because it's something that personally affects people more directly.
Right.
More quickly.
It affects at all ages.
But
climate change does also, but people don't necessarily see it the same.
You have to work harder to think about the consequences of climate change.
It is very true.
But on the flip side, think of what we're actually doing here. We're canceling flights.
I know.
That's lowering our carbon footprint.
Yeah.
We're not traveling as much. That's lowering our carbon footprint. Okay, all these things have big impacts on the economy.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, most of these things are just going to be postponed. They're going to do those trips later.
Yeah,
but what if we didn't? What if we just decided that a week out of every month was carbon-free day, where we just don't do it? We don't drive. And everybody's on the same page. In the same way
we are a world economy, and we can't close things down so people... And we're a world
economy.
Sure,
we can.
No, we can't.
Sure, we can.
So.
Sure, we can. If we all agree to, we can. We're doing it right now. We're doing it now. That's my point. And we need to be thinking about the climate crisis in these same terms. And
tell people in their 401ks how they feel about it, because it is affecting absolutely everything in everybody's lives.
And climate change is totally related. In fact, I saw another article. I don't know that it's directly related to this coronavirus. But you have thawing of the permafrost that is releasing things that have been, not exposed for quite a long time. And we don't have immunities to these things. So there is a relationship. But my bigger point is that this response to the coronavirus proves, like it did in World War II and other times, when there is a crisis, we can come together and do the right thing. And climate change is no different.
Well, no, I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah.
And I felt as though we were going in the right direction with climate change, and then people voted for Donald Trump, who's just a monster.
Yeah,
right.
And that's what happened. And so it wasn't being ignored.
No.
We just, this country just...
Well, four years later, people are rethinking that.
Yeah.
Right.
And,
right.
And that they did support the wrong candidate.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm just wondering, all these people that, you know, that I know that put Trump 2020 on their Facebook just to needle people.
Sure.
Hey, how do you feel now? How do you like your stock market now? Hey. How do you like your portfolio?
Yeah.
How do you like Donald Trump now? Trump's 2020 still?
You mean after the Obama recovery?
Yeah, exactly.
The guy inherited an economy that was on the upswing.
That's right.
In fact, there was more growth during, percentage growth during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still not hitting his 4%. Remember he promised 4% growth at least?
The guy's a liar. I gotta bring up something happy. Former Petaluma Norman Greenbaum.
Yeah, I saw that.
50 years of Spirit in the Sky. It's so interesting how many movies.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's been on, but and he talked about Jerry Schwartz in this article. And Jerry started Jerome's Good Dogs in Cotati in the 70s, and Jerry's passed away. You know, so he's not around anymore. But at home, I found a Jerome's Good Dog apron and a little sack, you know, that says, mm-hmm. you know, has the logo on it and stuff. And
yeah.
His son, Nate. Someday I'm going to give it to Nate, but I'm not quite ready to give it up at this point. But, you know, I would like him to have it.
So where does Norman live now?
He lives in Santa Rosa.
Okay, former Petaluma.
And what's interesting is there was a place called the Agri in the Dolowitzes. Marv Dolowitz had what was called the Agri. And then we had Cater Farm, so it was like two different animals. They were definitely more on the hippie side, and my dad was more on the opposite side. So it was always interesting growing up in these situations. So Marv Dolowitz, they would have the Agri, and Norman Greenbaum would come in there and play.
How cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was actually really cool. So I need to call Evie, you know, Evelyn Dolowitz, Nitzberg, and just bring this up because I was really happy to see Jerry Schwartz's name in here because people that know Jerry Schwartz, you know, we'll remember, you know, Jerome's Good Dogs. And then what was the name of his restaurant?
Oh, the barbecue place?
The barbecue. Jerome's
Barbecue.
Yeah, Jerome's Barbecue.
Yeah.
And Norman Greenbaum ended up, when he came back, he was a cook there. And what's interesting is that all of a sudden, he ended up making a really good deal when he sold the rights to his song. He kept 50%. So the guy's just been living well.
Yeah.
But it's a great song. And it's interesting just reading the article in the Argus Courier and, like, his thought on the Spirit in the Sky and, you know, the religious kind of value, and it was interesting. So I can't wait to actually talk to Evelyn and go back in the past.
I wish I was fonder of that song, except that Diane Riley Torres used that as her theme song for her show.
God. Oh my God!
The City Watchdog.
God, I forgot about
there's some nice
the City Watchdog.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Yeah.
So let's see. Anything else good to talk? I mean, it's just people, as far as the virus, people need to really be diligent. They really, especially at your certain age, you should not be around, you know, a lot of people. Make sure that you really wipe things down well in your home. And if you're going somewhere, you know, doorknobs are filthy.
The touching of the face is one of the simplest things.
And
it's so hard not to do. Yeah.
I know. It's you know, we just have to kind of rethink things.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of places to look for information. I actually saw this on the web from LinkedIn, some notes from a UCSF expert panel that took place on March 10th. It is really full of good information, and I'm thinking maybe we might be able to link that to our website.
Yes. And
well, there was also my cousin Jeremy Faust. He's been on CNBC, and he wrote another doctor actually wrote to Trump about what they really needed to do with his virus. And so he's been on the national news for this, and I'm just really proud of him because he is he's a young doctor. He's an emergency mm-hmm. doctor, and he's just bright, thoughtful, and really out there. And unfortunately, the president is not listening to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And with basically everybody needs to be tested. And so you might want to look up Jeremy Faust, MD, MS.
I I just had a crazy thought.
Something different?
yeah.
No.
No, I hate to go here because it's a little bit conspiratorial. But in a way, maybe Trump doesn't want a lot of testing because when you test, you find out how many people have it.
Supporting evidence?
Yeah, you don't want some.
No, I mean,
seriously.
This is why it's so serious. And I really do believe he slowed this down intentionally because he could not control it. And he was trying to control this.
Yeah.
And then they were also thinking, well, we need to privatize these test kits. We need to privatize the labs because that's what he wants is privatization.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's evil. This man is evil. And don't think that he wasn't going in that direction to try and, you know, make the numbers different.
I don't know. I'm only speculating.
I think based on the way he behaves.
Well, this is the problem with him, is he just doesn't have credibility. I mean, if you lie all the time, there's a crisis like this, how can you believe
it? Why did it take a pandemic for people to maybe look and see that the guy's a liar? That is what
Because it affects them personally, maybe. I don't know.
The stock market affected them personally, but they're blaming Barack Obama, for God's sake.
I don't know.
No matter what,
I'm pretty terrified of all this. Again, being over 60. Janice, you and I both
I know
that one.
So what is so how has your life changed? Are you generally not going out as much now?
Well, earlier this week I had a immediate family member placed in hospice at a local skilled nursing facility here in Petaluma, and so I'm going up there every day and spending many hours up there, and I'm still seeing things that it's unbelievable that these healthcare workers in these facilities aren't, maybe they are being covered and they're just not following protocol, but walking in and out of rooms. So, I mean, the bottom line in any facility, a hospital, skilled nursing, is you gel in and you gel out.
I was going to say they don't have every door.
There are gel stations in every single room there, but I constantly see people walking in and out of rooms with gloves on. I mean, you're supposed to be taking those gloves off and gelling before you walk out of that room. These people are walking out with gloves that they've had on after they've been handling a patient or a resident, you know, so.
See, this goes back to my microbiology.
This is how these things get out of control.
Exactly.
So,
well, I felt that way the other day when I was at PBH, and there was this gal that was hacking, and I just got up and I walked away. I mean, I was there bringing a friend to the emergency room, and I'm still can't stop thinking about that gal. And I didn't see a lot of hand sanitizer at the PBH emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anybody that was, after somebody came out of the bathroom, was in there wiping it down.
Yeah.
And this was last Sunday. And I was aware that I was concerned. And I didn't feel like there was an area of safety.
Yeah.
So
I actually contacted the ombudsman with the County of Sonoma reported it because...
You.
And what he told me is that other places are actually taking the temperature of people as they're coming in to visit. And if they have a fever, they're not allowed to come in and visit residents.
Well, smart.
And it's simple. It's not like you have to stick a thermometer in their mouth. They've got the forehead patches that takes just a second.
Well, I mean, what is this? I mean, they go like this, you know, over your forehead, which nobody knows what this is. You know, they take like a little ball and it goes over your head and then they go in the back of your ear and then your temperature is taken.
When I went to China in 2008, when SARS was happening, they had big, they look almost like the metal detectors that we walk through now at the airports. But when you got off the plane at the airport, you walked through a detector that actually took your temperature as you were walking through.
That's scary, but that's why I appreciate you bringing that up, because that's what I was kind of wondering. Why were we letting people get off planes without actually testing them? Everybody that got off an airplane should have had a test kit.
Yep.
And it came somehow. It's getting around some way.
Yeah.
And we're not immune to it.
I was going to go to Italy next month.
Oh!
I'm supposed to go to Hawaii in May.
No, I'd go.
I'm probably going to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would go. Then.
Unless Trump or somebody cancels everything. I don't know. We don't know what this is going to look like in a month.
Yeah, but that, but that would be the worst thing if you got stuck in Hawaii though and couldn't come back.
There was something in the newspaper today about in the crater in Hawaii that there were some bombs in there.
Unexploded ordnance.
Exactly. And so I haven't actually finished the article, but now I wish I would have, because we could have talked about that more.
Okay, save it for next week.
That's last week.
You've been listening to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, here with my co-hosts, Jason Davies and Janice Peter Thompson. We're here every Friday for you from 11 to noon. Brown Boy Talking will not be on the air today. That's Brown Boy Jordan Torres. He's taking the day off, but we will see you next Friday, same time, same place.
Be safe.
And be safe out there, everybody. All right. Have a good weekend, you guys.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye, people.